All right, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to CMMC Today. I'm your host, Dwayne Hodges. I am a lead assessor, and I'm also joined here with James Harper, who is also a CMMC lead assessor for Quartronics. And today, James is going to help us break down some of these cybersecurity controls that on the outskirts seem to be relatively intuitive, but when you break them apart, a little bit more complex. And he's going to help us get some insights on how these controls are implemented, how they're used, the good, bad, and ugly. So, James, welcome.
Thanks, Dwayne. This is an exciting control. It's the first one in NIST 800-171, and I would argue that it's probably one of the most important ones.
Yeah. Well, so let's jump right into it, James. Let's break down and dissect. What is access control? Tree level 3.1.1, and why do organizations care about it?
It's essentially a control that ensures that the right people and the right processes and the right devices have access to a system. So you can think of this control as kind of a digital bouncer, a gatekeeper, so to speak, to keep outside people and organizations that don't belong in your digital party from entering your digital party. It's crucial that we have access control so we can prevent unauthorized access to sensitive information like controlled unclassified information, or CUI.
Yeah. So, you know, I can't let you off the hook, James. I mean, for those that don't know what CUI is, can you elaborate on what CUI is and what it is not?
Well, that's a good question. So basically, CUI stands for controlled unclassified information. And it's information that requires safeguarding of the information and safeguarding of the dissemination of that information. It's per federal law or federal regulations. And examples of that might be technical drawings, manufacturing specs, sensitive information that's in a contract, things like that. So it's unclassified, but it's information that could harm national security or a company's interests if it falls into the wrong hands, and especially if it's aggregated between multiple organizations. Threat actors can use that information in aggregate to come up with a more complete picture of what we're doing with our military and what our capabilities are, and that's why it needs to be safeguarded.
Okay, so we got it back. We got this gatekeeper of users and processes and devices. We know what CUI is. So I'm a C3. I'm an organization seeking certification. I'm just an engineer. And you need to tell me exactly what I need to do to implement this control. Can you explain to me in Reader's Digest the basics? What would you tell an engineer and architect?
It basically boils down to two sentences. The organization needs to know who has access, what has access, and what is being done with that access on the devices that they have. And then limit the activity that goes on the network to just those users, processes, and devices that are supposed to be there.
Yeah. So let's go a little bit deeper. Tell me about the user.
Okay.
What am I doing when it comes to the user?
The user are the people that are using the devices and the first thing in the software. And the first thing we have to do is make sure that we know who they are. So that's identity. And the next thing is that they're authorized. In other words, they are supposed to have access to the information. And I missed one step in between there, between identifying themselves and authorization. There's also authentication. So we need to make sure that they are who they claim they are. So that's basically the idea with users. And then as far as how we do that, we do that with a user ID, like a username, and authorization, authentication would be a password to authenticate that the person is who they are. And also multi-factor authentication comes along with that. There's also for users, role-based access control, which means that not only do we have to make sure that the users have are able to have access to the system or supposed to have access to the system, but we have to make sure that they have access to the things that they need to have access to and not other things that might be on the system that they don't need access to. For example, you might have a person in finance who needs to know everything that there is to know about the finances of the program, but the engineer doesn't need to know that information. And likewise, the engineer probably doesn't need to know the information about finance. So role-based access control will say, okay, the accounting department has access to financial information, engineer has access to technical information. Those are their roles, and we're going to control their access based on that.
Yeah, and you know, user-based access control, and being able to put, like you mentioned, that user ID to identify individuals within the organization. We've been on a hook for this for a long time, but it seems like you mentioned something else that may be a little bit more complex, and that's processes. Can you talk to me about what process is and how do we implement that?
I think this is probably one of the least understood pieces of the controls, and I'm not sure that everybody in the CMMC ecosystem understands exactly what it is. Basically, processes are software tasks that are running in the background without a user interaction. And they're running automatically. For example, automated backup tools, security scanning tools, software updates, things like that. Each of those under this control, 3.1.1, need to be identified and they need to be authorized to run. The challenge here is to make sure that these processes just run with the privileges that they need to run, because a lot of times they need to run with administrative privileges. And so putting in place systems to limit those processes to just the things that they need to do their job is critical. Only access to things that they absolutely need to function. And this is the definition of least privilege, by the way. So we apply least privilege not only to users, but also processes that are running on behalf of those users.
So this brings us to devices. How do organizations manage the devices? We talked about users. We talked about the process. What about the actual devices?
One of the things that is not clear right away is the first step, I think, with implementing this control is developing an asset inventory. An inventory of all of the devices, all of the software running on those devices, and all the processes that are running on those devices. Device management is really challenging, and especially in a hybrid or a remote work environment. Organizations need to make sure that they have an inventory of all the devices that their users are using, and that includes things like laptops, mobile devices, or in some cases, maybe even IoT devices that are assigned to a user. These devices need access control solutions where their security status can be verified before they connect to the network, current antivirus, software patches, proper configuration, and so forth. So the asset inventory is going to specify all of those elements.
So, you know, we talked about devices, we talked about users, we talked about process, we understand what CUI is. A company within the defense industrial base, just call me Acme. How would this work in practice?
Okay, so let's say that Acme is hiring a vendor to install a new piece of equipment. And the vendor needs access to some diagnostic tools, and those diagnostic tools are connecting to, you know, Acme's network. So under this control, then Acme would identify the specific devices that the vendor would need to connect to, and then temporarily authorize them for access, network access on those devices. And then once the project finishes, then their access would need to be terminated. So identify, grant, and then terminate. That's the steps that they would need to go through.
So those, and you gave some really good examples that helped us illustrate that. And I know earlier, James, you talked about network access control as a solution. Is this a silver bullet? What other tools and technologies would I need as Acme to implement and enforce some of these controls?
Another one would be, well, the question is, of course, is Acme going to do this in-house, or is it going to outsource a huge piece of it? And most companies in the DIB, in the defense industrial base, are not large enough to have their whole implementation crew in-house. They're going to need help from outside vendors. And these outside vendors are usually termed as MSPs, which is a managed service provider, or an MSSP, which is a managed security service provider. What the company does, a company like Acme that is seeking certification, they identify the devices and the people and the processes with their access and their asset inventory. And then that list is, it's like a list of people that are supposed to come to a party, right? And the MSP or the MSSP acts as a bouncer, so to speak, to limit who can come in to that access list, keep the people out that are not supposed to be there, and monitor the party to make sure that somebody hasn't slipped in the meantime. So that is kind of an analogy. The actual names of these kind of things, so there's identity and access management. That's what you use to prove who people are and what they have access to. And that often integrates with things like Active Directory or other similar services. There's SIEMs, which are Security Information and Event Management Systems. Those monitor and log attempts to access a system. And then there's Privileged Access Management or PAM solutions, which those are used to implement the role-based access controls to make sure that person in finance doesn't have access to the engineering drawings or vice versa. Those implementations are usually done by the MSP or the MSSP using a shared responsibility model.
You know, James, I'm not going to let you off the hook that easy. I mean, I've implemented this control for a telecom provider, a very large telecom provider, and it seemed like it was taking us months, like we were trying to get our hands around a box that was well beyond the length of our hands. And so I don't want the audience to think that this is as simple as you explained it. What are some of the challenges here?
Well, the challenges include things like there's devices all over the place that were bought 10 or 15 years ago. They don't have software that can even be upgraded to secure versions. You have people who have brought in devices to their work environment. I've seen situations where people turn on their mobile hotspot on their phone, and they use that to transfer files from the company's system to their Gmail accounts. It's a big challenge. And I think one of the big things is we have to remember that we have these technical controls that usually the MSP or the MSSP implements, but we also have to create a culture, an employee culture of security. Let me tell you a quick story that happened to me last week. I went into a facility that required access with a card reader. And an individual got out of his car right before I did. And he was in a hurry. He walked up to the door. I was 5 feet behind him, something like that. He swipes his badge, went in the door. I tried to grab the door, before it closed, but I missed it maybe by a half second. Security saw me. Security buzzed me in. All good to go. I walked behind the guy, 10 feet behind him, all the way down the hall. He had no idea that I was behind him in the parking lot. He had no idea I was behind him after I got into the building. Now, if I had been a threat actor and I had come in and been able to grab that door a half second earlier, I would have been in. And the company may have had cameras that they monitor. Yeah, every 24 hours they look at the cameras. They may be monitoring their badge access, doing everything right. But I still got in the door. And the reason is that we had an employee that wasn't following best security practices, and he didn't have a culture of security. He was not aware of his surroundings. So that's the big challenge, I think, that we have on all of these kind of controls. Remember that the majority of data breaches occur because people are involved. People give up information. People don't use common sense. People don't follow the policies. And then the bad people get in. It's not that common anymore that hackers go and they have scripts to try billions of passwords and try to force their way into an account. That's usually not how it works. So that's the biggest challenge, is to cultivate the culture of employee security.
Yeah, I mean, you bring up a really good point. And I think that fundamentally, this program evolved from the insider threat from DOD, you know, what's going on. And so I think that, you know, the human will always be the weakest link in security. As the late Kevin Mitnick once said, there's no patch for stupidity, right? So 30 seconds, like, what is one takeaway you want everyone to know about this control?
I think the thing to remember about this control and every other one is that any kind of cybersecurity program, whether it's compliance-based like CMMC or just an ad hoc best practices security system, is that we need to make sure that we have buy-in from our team. And we cultivate a culture of security. And we do that by creating our policies and procedures. We do that by implementing technical controls. But we also do it by living every day. And one of the big things for living every day with a security mindset is doing regular reviews of the controls. And this one is certainly no exception to that, because employees are always getting promoted. They're getting they're getting their jobs reassigned. They're leaving the organization. Access lists need to be updated immediately every time any of these kind of things happen. So you can't just create a bunch of policies and procedures and access controls, put it in a box, seal that box, and say, okay, I'm not going to get another CMMC assessment for 3 years. And it's going to be another 10 months before I even have to self-certify. So we'll come back, you know, at that point, we'll clean everything up. No, that's not the way it works. And any organization that doesn't take that to heart is opening themselves up for the possibility of a data breach and really reducing their chances of passing an assessment successfully.
James Harper, CEO and founder of Quadronics and lead assessor, thank you for your time. We look forward to having you back to break down CMMC cybersecurity controls in the future. Until next time, please like us and subscribe to the podcast. Thank you.